The following programming is sponsored by Bruce Grossinger. The views expressed do not necessarily reflect the views of this station, its management, or Beasley Media Group.
The Sports Doctor is on the air. Dr. Bruce Grossinger with Rover Sports Tuesday evenings at 7:30 on WWDB. Dr. Bruce and the Rover crew blend sports and pop culture to keep you entertained and thinking. Brought to you by the Philadelphia Regenerative Medicine and Stem Cell Institute, where Dr. Grossinger and his team help athletes and chronic pain sufferers heal faster and stronger, often without the need for drugs or surgery. Visit online at phillysportsdoc.com and tune in to WWDB Tuesday nights at 7:30 for Rover Sports.
Here. Welcome in to our show, Rover Sports. Welcome into this beautiful country, this beautiful land, this wonderful summer night in the city of Philadelphia. We are Rover Sports, and we are going to be covering some national and local sports issues with Spencer G. Josh Dacey will be calling in, and our national expert in everything gambling, Mr. Charlie Bowles. And we have Colin Newby, who will be producing our show tonight. And I want to thank everybody for logging in to Bruce Grossinger Facebook. I'd like to start off with something that is not my favorite story, but one needs to be covered, and that is the fact that the NBA champions are the Boston Celtics. They've risen the banner no less than 18 times in an illustrious history. And this was a gentleman's sweep. This was a 4-1 shellacking of the Dallas Mavericks. And there was little drama to be seen in the series. We're going to break it down a little bit. And in doing so, we're going to look closely at the roster of the Celtics. And as well, we're going to have to compare the Philadelphia 76ers, noting the abundant cap space. And the question you can see on our Rover Sports headline is, can the Sixers bridge the gap? So, Spencer, I'd like you to start off by talking about the Boston Celtics and what you saw. What did you see in the NBA playoffs? And we want to see what's going on with the Celtics? What happened? Some people say they had the easiest road to the Larry O'Brien Trophy in history. That might be the case, but it doesn't really matter because they're hoisting the trophy at the end.
Yeah, I look at Boston, and I felt that they were the best team in the entire playoffs. And I felt that, you know, the Eastern Conference is significantly easier, but for these guys like Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown, they stayed together even when they failed, and Brad Stevens was really patient. And then going out there and getting a Drew Holiday, giving away Malcolm Brogdon and also Marcus Smart, they were able to utilize all their assets. And then taking on a real kind of project in Kristaps Porzingis, a guy who always got hurt, and kind of getting players from teams that I guess haven't always won. So you look at a Porzingis, and then Holiday, I guess, was on the Bucks and the Blazers. So it's just a really special team, and I think that honestly no other team was going to compete with this team. I mean, Josh, do you think that there's a world in which, you know, maybe a Denver Nuggets or a Minnesota Timberwolves could have competed with Boston, Josh?
I think it was their year, buddy. I got to be honest. You talk about Drew Holiday. You know, the idiots who believed in the process, he was the first piece to go when they traded him. So Drew Holiday was a former Sixer. And he did pretty well. So I got to be honest with you, Spencer. It was a good team. They were the best team all year.
Yes. Charlie Bowles, welcome to the show. And I was wondering, obviously, I think that you, from the early on, had a notion that Boston was an unbeatable team. And in fact, we've done a lot of shows where you reported that. What's your view, what's your overview of the NBA Finals?
Well, they even, and hello to everyone, they exceeded anything I thought they will. I mean, look, I'm not going to say Jaylen Brown is the best player in the game, but he's the best two-way player in the game, and I think he's proved that. He had a very, very good series, MVP of the series, all the while guarding Luka, who basically proved, and it's unfortunate because Luka is maybe the most talented player in the league, but he just is a dog on defense. He was exploited again in the game last night. I think Dallas is extremely talented, and I think they'll be back. But Boston is just the beginning for Boston. Their whole team's coming back next year. So unless someone, even if Philly adds someone, can they beat Boston? I don't know. I don't think so.
So Josh, you watched this series with interest, and you look at this Boston Celtics team. So the question is, do you see them winning next year? Are they the odds-on favorite? And quick follow-up, Josh, is what will it take for a team? We're going to get into the Sixers later on in the show in Rover Sports. But right now, what will it take to prevail over this Celtics team?
I mean, one thing you saw is chemistry. They got guys off the bench that are playing together. It's going to be very hard. It's going to be very hard. I think you got a lot of young guys. And what I like about this team is you can look back and thank the Jerry Colangelo's of the world for giving these two picks away. That we got Markelle Fultz and Ben Simmons.
Yeah, it's pretty hard to rebound from two disastrous picks. And early on, actually, in this very studio, we had Tom Giordano and Drew Van Bargen, and we had a post-production meeting where we talked about in NBA history, are there two guards who are less more gun-shy in shooting a basketball? And they're both first-round picks, Spencer. What are your thoughts on that?
Not only first-round picks, the first overall picks, two of the biggest, but I would say the Markelle Fultz is a bigger bust. I mean, he never even made an all-star team. At least Simmons gave you 5 or 6 years, got to a second contract. I mean, there have been worse number one overall picks. But, a guy like Al Horford, was on the 76ers with Brett Brown and was so dysfunctional. But really, I look at the Boston Celtics, and I just think that their team, they're going to go down maybe as one of the best teams ever. They need to win next year to cement that. But I don't think it was close. I don't blame Luka Doncic at all. I mean, Luka was able to beat Oklahoma City, Minnesota. I don't think Dallas's roster is very good. I mean, who do you have? PJ Washington. You have Josh Green. I mean, who's the third scorer on Dallas? If Derek Lively's not catching lobs, I just think it was totally unfair. Like, you put Luka on the Celtics, it's not close. I still think he's the best player in this series. I still would put him right behind Jokic. I did not expect Luka to win this NBA Finals. I mean, his road was tougher. Boston could rest their guys. They were able to play. Porzingis didn't even have to play. That's how much of a joke the East was. I mean, Indiana, Cleveland. I mean, Cleveland without Donovan Mitchell. Are you kidding me? So Boston, it was so much better than Dallas. Like, top to bottom. If you were doing a draft, Boston would maybe have... they would have six of the top eight, and then Kyrie Irving even played worse than like Drew Holiday. Kyrie Irving was a total no-show in the finals.
He sure was. And we know that Kyrie has history with Boston, and it looks like he choked. He basically choked. He only won one game in Boston in his whole career, and he didn't show up. And when you have two scorers, when you have Dallas, they have Luka, and you also have Kyrie. And Kyrie was just missing everything, and he just looked out of sorts. And I think the Boston Celtics crowd psyched Irving out. Charlie, you watched the game. What did you see with Kyrie? What was wrong with him?
Well, I think he just proved that he's, again, mentally not as tough as we thought. Because, again, he admitted it. He said that the fans got into his head. And that was the first game they played to the last game they played. You know, Boston, by the way, is an overwhelming favorite to win it again next year. They're like Scottie Scheffler favorite. They're less than 3-1, where the next closest team is Denver at almost 7-1. Again, and I got to call it like I see it with Luka. I'm one of his biggest fans, especially going into this series. But look, I saw, and there are so many instances where he just didn't hustle and get back on defense. I mean, he was a dog on defense. And honestly, that slips him down from where I thought could be the best player in the world. And honestly, I'll take Jaylen Brown over him every day.
You're going to take Jaylen Brown over Luka?
I would.
Really? But Luka could score so much better than Jaylen Brown. I mean, Luka has...
If you're scoring 30 and letting up 35, it doesn't really matter. But I mean, I'm telling you, go back and watch. Luka didn't hustle. I mean, Jason Tatum, and by the way, Brown guarded Doncic the entire series. Luka was just, it was almost like he was just standing still, taking a rest on defense. It was embarrassing. The Sixers drafted Markelle Fultz over Jason Tatum. I mean, someone who gets paid to do that for a living and watch every game thought that was a good decision.
No, and everybody did. But I was one of the guys that wanted Jason Tatum. But Charlie, I mean, Jaylen Brown, I would take Tatum over Brown. I have Brown as like the eighth best player in the league. And the thing about Brown is that he can't pass like Luka. I mean, isn't it amazing that Luka got this team to the finals anyway? Like, wasn't he great in the Wolves series just because he had a bad NBA finals? You're like knocking Luka poorly in the finals.
Okay, remember, Josh, though, it's kind of like Mike Trout, who has the best talent out of anyone in baseball, but he's not a winner. Jaylen Brown is a winner. He plays defense. He does the little things that are going to win a championship.
Josh, when we look at the Sixers, they had Jrue Holiday. It seems like they had him 20 years ago. They seem like they have a great ability to get rid of great talent. Markelle Fultz never played a game in a Sixers uniform. And these moves, they really haunt you. They linger over like a stench over the city, like Marcus Hook on a day when the wind is rolling the wrong way, like a day like today when it was 95 degrees. And it's hard to come back from that. So what do you think about Jrue Holiday? I mean, that guy just won his second NBA championship. He was ice. And even when I saw the game, when the Celtics started off slow in the last couple games, Jrue Holiday is the one guy who just showed up and scored the first few baskets and kind of broke the ice.
Doc, I think Jrue Holiday, he's a winner on and off the field, off the court. So with his wife going through the cancer and everything else, he's a class act. I think the Sixers, in my opinion, are the dumpster fire of the NBA. They're the worst franchise in sports because they just continue to make bad moves.
Yeah, there's no question they've had the whole idea of tanking, and it just was bad karma. And we were talking today about Nerlens Noel. We can think about all the bad draft picks and all the think about all the second round draft picks. You traded away like a million of them, and again, there are certain second round draft picks that can turn into something. The Sixers never even gave them a chance. We look at the coach, we look at Brett Brown, Doc Rivers, and obviously Nick Nurse. He's just getting started. He's just getting his feet wet. But the one thing that is characterized by the Sixers team is they don't develop talent. If somebody comes to the team with talent, they'll usually stay the same. The one exception is Tyrese Maxey, who really got better. But if we look at so many players that came, they might go to the G League. They might basically never come back. The Jalen Springers of the world.
Yeah.
They just do not develop talent.
You're absolutely right. I mean, that pick in the Bridges trade, or even like a Charles Bassey, was terrible. But I look back at Jrue Holiday, though, and Jrue was so young on the Sixers. And when Jrue played on the New Orleans Pelicans, the Pelicans gave him away. So you're looking at a B-minus player who was elevated and gotten better. It's so rare for one guy to stay with the franchise. The Celtics are a ready-made team. It's not like Jrue Holiday's a very good player, but I don't think he's a cornerstone superstar. And how come no one is blaming the Sixers for Al Horford? I mean, that Al Horford was here a lot closer in time than when Jrue Holiday was here. I just think that Holiday has gone through the cycle a lot of times. I don't blame the Sixers for that. That was like a decade ago.
Yeah, very interesting statistic. We went over this yesterday because watching the game itself was not fun. But Charlie, you probably heard this stat. In the history of the NBA playoffs, Al Horford is number two all time, until yesterday, in games without a championship trophy. And again, he played with Atlanta. Most people forget about that. Played a lot of years with Boston. And when he came to the Sixers, it looks like he was done. He was done, flat out, had nothing left. And then he went back and he found the fountain of youth again. And there's something about that chatter in Boston that Al Horford just had a complete revival. It went back to being a great player again. And here he was just out of sorts, loser. He could not play with Joel Embiid. What did you think about Horford in that series, Charlie?
Well, I think they misused Horford. Number one, I guess I can't blame Horford because he did sign here, but it looked like he didn't want to be here from the minute he signed. He was out of position. They misused him. And I think when he got back to Boston, again, he was, you know, the third or fourth or fifth option, and there was no pressure on him. I don't remember Philly using him the way Boston used him. Again, it was a while ago. But I really thought they kind of used him as a backup to Embiid versus, like, you know, he may be really tall, but his better part of his game is outside the line. I mean, the guy can shoot the ball. He's not a banger, but he's got a really good jump shot. So, you know, I think at the end of the day, the organization, sometimes it's just a bad fit. I'm not making excuses for him, but you're right. Whoever said use, I think you did. He said the fountain of youth. That's 100% accurate.
Josh, you look at a guy named Derek White, who we like to call the squirrel affectionately.
I think we lost Josh, actually.
Okay, we lost Josh, but that's okay. So, Spencer,
yeah,
you're next man up. So, Derek White, I called the squirrel because he kind of looks like he's got nuts. He likes to pouch some nuts. One of the guys who's one of the most impressive guys, and every year seems to get better. The thing about Derek White is he doesn't go for the limelight. He plays really good D. He helps bring up the ball. He's one of those guys you need to have. And I get more impressed. He's still a young guy. He's been in the league, what, maybe 3 years?
Yeah. Probably like 6 years.
6 years, okay.
Yeah, he's older. He's 29.
Okay. So, again, he's a guy who goes unnoticed. But the squirrel, one of our favorite people, is, when I say favorite, he's kind of an interesting, quirky kind of a guy. And, you know, he had a funny haircut, and he shaved his hair. He actually looks better without hair. Our last minute, give us a recap of the squirrel.
No, I mean, great shooter, terrific defender, but really a talent. He fits into the Celtics. I just think that Brad Stevens is running circles around everybody. I think he's the most powerful person, you could argue, in all of sports. I mean, he was the coach here at Butler. He got to two championships. Danny Ainge absolutely schooled the Sixers with the Jason Tatum thing, which is incredible. He finally gets credit. But Derek White is a great player. Like, he's very good. Great defender, has long wingspan. But Boston, their coaching staff just develops, and his jump shot has just been so pure. He's developed it. Sam Hauser, Pritchard are the same way. You put these guys on other teams, they would go to irrelevance. In fact, you look at Marcus Smart and Grant Williams, they were good on Boston. You leave Boston, you turn into the Bermuda Triangle. You turn into nothing. Look at Malcolm Brogdon. So it's all Boston, I think. I think it's all Brad Stevens. The guy is just a magician.
We are up against the break. The long way back after the break.
The Sports Doctor is on the air. Dr. Bruce Grossinger with Rover Sports Tuesday evenings at 7:30 on WWDB. Dr. Bruce and the Rover crew blend sports and pop culture to keep you entertained and thinking. Brought to you by the Philadelphia Regenerative Medicine and Stem Cell Institute, where Dr. Grossinger and his team help athletes and chronic pain sufferers heal faster and stronger, often without the need for drugs or surgery. Visit online at phillysportsdoc.com and tune in to WWDB Tuesday nights at 7:30 for Rover Sports.
WWDB 860 AM Philadelphia and WPEN HD2 Burlington, Philadelphia.
We are live on air here at the beautiful studios that we share with our big brother, the Fanatic. They are 97.5 HD1. We're 97.5 HD2. We're WWDBAM.com. For many of you, 5,000 strong on Bruce Grossinger Facebook. We are fully loaded here as we look over a city, a beautiful city, Philadelphia, a hot, steamy city. And as we look at that, we now look at the title, the long way back, the Sixers. What can they do? They have plenty of cap space, and we're going to talk a little bit about ping-ponging this around. Our staff, Sports Talk here, Spencer G, Charlie Bowles, Josh Daish, he's straddling between coaching and also, of course, Mitch Rosenberg, the best accountant in the world. I'll give him great props. The smartest, best, and nicest guy. And big Florida Panthers fan, a guy who's just acquired his dream house in Florida. So, Mitch, thanks for logging on to Rover Sports. But, Charlie, let's begin by talking about the long way back. You are now, I hear that they fired Daryl Morey and they hired Charlie Bowles. And you have, how much do you have in cap space to play with?
I think $55 million.
Okay. So we're going to bounce around some ideas. So let's bounce around some ideas. So you're the GM, and we're going to kind of go around the horn a little bit. What moves are you entertaining right now, GM Charlie?
Well, I'm entertaining all moves, number one. I think we all saw the picture of Nick Nurse and company having lunch with LeBron, which was kind of odd, over the weekend. Again, I don't know if there's anything to that or not, but, you know, I think, again, they seem to be struggling between Paul George and LeBron, but I would do something different. I would maybe look to make a trade with the Nets and try to right the wrong of that Villanova guy who got away a couple of years ago, you know, Mr. Bridges. I think he would be a great fit. You know, again, I'm a Paul George fan, but I think, again, and George is a two-way player, but I think Bridges would be actually probably the better fit in the long run. And will the Nets part with him? Probably, because they seem to be a team going nowhere, and he's not going to be a number one star on a team that's going to win a championship. So maybe they could put a package together nice enough. That's what I'm trying to do. Aside from that, there's just not much available.
So if we look at I'm going to throw a name at you, Spencer.
Yeah.
Zach LaVine.
Mm-hmm.
How he's I'll give you my take, and then I want to hear your he hasn't won anything ever. He's a very flashy player. At times, he's been criticized for inconsistent effort, for not a great defender.
Mm-hmm.
But certainly, he plays really well here in Philadelphia. He can shoot threes. He's incredibly athletic around the rim. I don't know if you could cajole him to play defense, but he's a guy who could certainly bring offense. And if we look at Maxey and Embiid, they really need a third star. Mm-hmm. And I think if we compare, obviously, LeBron, Paul George, you're looking at some of these people that you're bantering around. They're going to command so much money. They could drain the whole, you know, a lot of the $55 million. I think Zach LaVine, you could get him probably on a two-year deal for less. And he's been in a basically Bermuda's Triangle in Chicago. And I think he enjoys Philadelphia. And guy I'm enamored with. What do you think about LaVine?
I like Zach LaVine a lot. I really do. I mean, I really like his potential. Now, I think that LaVine is worth a boatload of money. I think that he's even more expensive than a Mikal Bridges. Like, I think LaVine might be making like $40 million or $42 million. Like, I think he's going to cost even more than Paul George. He's definitely going to cost more than LeBron, I think, because he's 28, 29, considered a star player. I like going after a player like that because that's somebody that's like a Porzingis with Boston, like somebody who's never really won, but Zach LaVine can shoot it. He has the athletic ability. Him and Maxey would be electric, and that kind of gives you a little bit of a core with Embiid. And then if you have to trade an Embiid, you always could, and then your team could be intact. So I kind of like these ideas of giving away your draft picks, almost all your draft picks, because that's who you're going to have to give away. Because the Sixers don't have great assets. I don't think Oubre's on the roster. So who on the roster can you trade to get a Bridges or a LaVine, Bruce? I'm asking you. I don't think there's anybody but those draft picks. So somebody's going to have to be enamored with the idea of draft picks in 5 or 6 years. You're going to have to package everything. I think that's the only thing you can do, Bruce.
I agree. I disagree with Kelly Oubre. I think you could get him on a mid-range deal.
So a sign and trade, though? Because who are you? I think you have to give away a player to get a LaVine or a Bridges, Charlie. I mean, who can the Sixers trade to get like a Bridges?
Let me just stop you. Charlie, I love the idea of it, but while we're on the topic of Kelly Oubre, before we just go away from him, would you sign Oubre, Charlie?
For the, right,
for the right price. I mean, I wouldn't overpay for him because there's a million of them out there. There's a lot of players that are just as talented as him all over the place. So again, if he fits into the team chemistry, you know, like you said, you can't just, and this has been proven many years in a row now, you can't just throw a bunch of guys together because they have a big name and win the championship. You need that chemistry. So if he's going to like keep that team chemistry and he fits in, then I would, but I wouldn't just go overpay him. But yeah, if he fits for the right price, sure.
So Spence, you've seen a lot as far as on Facebook and on YouTube, that meal with LeBron. So
yeah,
putting things aside as far as LeBron and the King and all that, some of the stuff that's rubbed us a little bit the wrong way later in his career, LeBron, Paul George, Maxey, Embiid, and others, you'd obviously be looking at a two-year window, really, a two-year window with LeBron at most. Maybe trying to bring in Bronny because LeBron wants to bring his son in. He wants to play with his son. The Sixers have, you know, they're a bit aimless, and they probably would do that. They probably would go on that ride. How good would that team be? And could that team, with Paul George, LeBron, Embiid and Maxey, kind of a super team, kind of the way Boston put together a super team and they won that championship. What are your thoughts about that? And could that team beat the Boston Celtics?
It would be a tall task for that team to beat Boston. I'd give Nick Nurse a ton of credit. I think he would immediately go to the hot seat because there's a possibility that LeBron James, who's, you know, he's an ego. Embiid certainly has ego. Because they're star players, if it doesn't go right, and Nick Nurse is a hard-nosed coach, and LeBron James, he kind of gets to draw up a lot of the plays. Now, LeBron is 40 years old, so maybe he would be, you know, willing to listen to the Nick Nurse ideas, but Nurse would kind of fade into the background then. It's a short-term play. So this is what I think you should do. I like the idea of Bridges or a possibility of LaVine because that keeps your window open longer. But if you don't do that, I do like LeBron as my favorite, like, older free agent. And then this draft is so weak that, you know, you're even having Klingon or Reed Shepard, like, a second-round pick. The Sixers missed those, and in fairness to the Sixers, the odds of a second-round pick hitting are slim. So if you take LeBron's son and he's like a defender, you know, even the Greek Freak has his brother in the NBA, and he doesn't do that much.
Doesn't do anything, actually.
I mean, there's guys that come off the bench, Bruce, even Mo Bamba, that are just, like, not that great. You could put LeBron James' son on this team, and it's not a horrible idea. I think LeBron is so intellectual. I think he can get the most out of Embiid. It's not the worst idea. I think that you could have a winner with the 76ers and LeBron James. Like, really, on the basketball floor, the guy's a brilliant player. He's the second best player to me to ever play. I know that he might be, you know, top five or top 10, the Charlie or other players. Maybe he's top three, top two, right there with Michael Jordan. But he can get the most out of Embiid, and I think he could be creative. I think that he can outsmart Boston in a lot of ways. It's a short-term roll the dice, though, because you might not win. You might clash egos. Nick Nurse, it might flame out brilliantly, though. That's why I think Bridges and LaVine is a much safer play. But if you're going to go older, why not?
If I look at Josh Harris, I look at Daryl Morey. One word, one theme is star hunting. They both like star hunting. And Josh Harris, you can say what you want about him, but he knows how to run a profitable franchise. He's made billions through his acquisitions with the Jersey Devils. And obviously, he was able to get there was a fire sale for the Washington Redskins. He was able to pick that up. But I think that somehow Josh Harris would be able to monetize the merchandise for LeBron James and Joel Embiid, and he'd be able to sell the season tickets. He'd also be able to jack up. They've always been able to jack up the seats every year, much to my chagrin. And this year, I was thinking maybe they will jack him up one more year. But if they bring LeBron in, I think we can expect that. Charlie, yeah. I know LeBron is not your favorite player. Could you envision a world where the Sixers have Paul George, LeBron, Maxey, and Embiid? Could you see that happening? And if so, what do you see in your crystal ball?
unless one of them is willing to take a $40 million pay cut, that will never happen, ever. Because it's they just got too much. Million.
You just can't fit them under the cap. That's what you're saying.
Nah, these guys are going to make $50 million each a year, so that won't happen. But look, I've come around on LeBron a bit. I don't like him as a person. I think he's a rotten person because of what he does with the China situation off the game. But as a player, you have to respect the guy's game. Now, you're right. I think Spencer said he got a two-year window. And at some point, look, he has overachieved last year. Probably was one of his best years as far as what expectations were. But at some point, Father Time's undefeated, right? So that's going to stop at some point. Now, if you sign him, you better hope that next year or the year after is not that year. Because, again, Boston, one thing they have on their side, aside from being very talented, is they're very young. So, if you sign LeBron, you're going to have to back him up with a bunch of shooters and a bunch of defenders, which, you know, again, it's always possible. But, again, it's not just that big name. It's going to be how they backfill, you know, the supporting staff.
Spence, I want you to come out there, but just let me throw something at you because Lisa from Reading had a question.
Yeah.
There's a lot of free agents, a lot of people on the Sixers. Are there any keepers? Obviously, Maxine Embiid. Mm-hmm. Ricky Council, ironically, is signed, so he's not a free agent. He showed us a little flash at the end of the year, and he had one great game, you know, and a little flash at home. You're looking at Nico Batum, Kelly Oubre, DeAndre Melton. Are there any of these guys that you would bring back?
Oubre for the right price, but I'll give Oubre credit. He had a really good season. And I think he is talented. I think that he's like maybe a B player. He's unafraid. He's athletic. He's probably about 6'8". I don't know if there's a ton of guy. I mean, I think Oubre's pretty good, and he does fit into the Sixers nucleus. But that would be it. Then the rest could be used on kind of these stars. Now, you know, Charlie brings up a really good point, both of you guys, about how Boston is so formidable. So there's so many paths. This offseason is very pivotal for the Sixers. There's so many directions in which they can go. And Charlie, I guess I'll ask you this question. If the Sixers, you look at Boston right now, Charlie, it's you know, Tatum and Brown are 27 and 28, and on or 27 and 26, and honestly, it's going to be hard to beat them for the next 2 years. You can look at a LeBron James, but also Charlie. I mean, Daryl Morey has a huge ego. He was the guy that wanted to just shoot all those threes. He cares about analytics and threes. Imagine Morey arguing with LeBron over threes. Nick Nurse, too. That would really, if you're Nick Nurse, you would have to be nervous, Charlie, right, about a LeBron James coming in here as a coach. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, because you would have two guys, Embiid and James, who really have no business being behind the three-point line, who love to jack them up. You know, again, do they sign Buddy Hield? They're like Lowry. If you get Lowry back under $3 million like he was last year, I mean, a veteran in the locker room, yeah, for the right price, sure.
Yeah, and again, yeah, mentioned Buddy Hield. They really did not know how to use Buddy Hield. In fact, he kind of was in the witness protection program, but for emerging in the first half of game six. And we could criticize Nick Nurse. He's a great coach, but after that great second quarter, Nick Nurse felt a need to bring Tobias Harris, silent T back in the third against the Knicks, did absolutely nothing. And you had a hot guy, a Hield, who is a streaky, excellent shooter, who finally found his rhythm. And it Hield, again, he was buried in Sacramento. He's been buried all over. I think he's a guy who probably would want to remain in Philly. You know, we could look at L.A., Chicago, New York. They're the premier places, but Buddy Hield is not exactly a guy who's going to be a marquee draw for marketing. And Buddy might want to stay here. So that's a guy I had forgotten about, Spence.
Yeah, Buddy Hield's interesting. And then again, unlike Oubre, his stock is lower, but that's a guy who can really shoot it. And in the regular season, it's going to be a very, you know, he's going to be a factor. Something we didn't consider, Charlie, I guess I'll ask you this question is, and this is like the third option here, but you're kind of a blow it up option with Joel Embiid. Is that possible to just get younger and wait for Boston to get older and take a step back? I mean, is that possible?
I think it's a good point. I think you got two choices here. I think you either go all again, and I don't know why teams don't do this all the time. I think you're either trying to win a championship or you're rebuilding. I don't know why anyone would settle for anything else. If you don't feel that you can have a window with Embiid in the next 2 to 3 years, again, it would have been the time probably a couple years ago to move him. But right now, I don't think he'll ever get more valuable if he's healthy. You could probably, you're always rolling the dice with draft picks. You just don't know what you're going to get in the future. But if you don't feel you can win with him in the next 2 to 3 years, because eventually that big body is going to break down. So if you don't feel you can honestly give it a shot and have a legitimate shot, let's face it, they haven't got out of the second round in a decade. So if you can't, I'm sorry, it's almost 20 years since they got out of the second round. So if you don't feel you can make that next step with him, you have no choice but to move him. But will they? Do they have the guts to do it?
Spencer, There was a comment made, and first I want to thank Dr. James Brady, who's a wonderful doctor, Northeast Philadelphia, fantastic. We collaborate all the time. Thanks for tuning in to Bruce Grossinger Facebook, Dr. Brady. Wonderful guy, great family. And what I want to do is talk about the haul that you could get for Embiid and the idea that he could go to be with one of his best friends, Jimmy Butler, in Miami. Who could you'd love to see Tyler Hero here. Imagine Hero and Maxey in the backcourt. Now, again, I'm not saying you're going to get a ton of defense from these guys, but Hero is probably one of your favorite players.
Any other
Miami Heat players that you'd find attractive?
Yeah, I mean Hawkes is I love Jaime Hawkes. I mean, I think that the guy could be a really solid pro, but
Tell us about him. A lot of people don't even know who he is. Tell us about
Hawkes. Well, Jaime Hawkes is from UCLA, and he had a really good rookie season. But he played 4 years at UCLA. He's a tough 6'6" guard. He really defends. He averages about 15 points. He's selfless. He's a Boston Celtics kind of player he'll chip his tooth just to get to a loose ball. He's tough as nails, and he could really shoot. He could really play. But I really think that with Josh Harris, like you mentioned, and Morey, I think it's a 95% chance. I mean, they're talking Paul George, they're talking LeBron. You actually mentioned Jimmy Butler. I actually think there's a chance the Sixers could be factoring in for a Jimmy Butler. So I think the Sixers are in all-in mode. And then guess what? You know, if the Sixers, Bruce, end up with Jimmy Butler, like, you got to admit that would be really exciting, right?
I think Sixers fans, I think fans all across the NBA love Jimmy Butler. He's a very dynamic player. He's a winner. And I think the reason Butler and J.J. Redick left here was because it was a joke with Brett Brown. There was no film review. It was a joke. It was like an elementary school team where there was no film review. And they both were just they laughed their way out of town. And the fact that they could select Ben Simmons and Tobias Harris and let Jimmy Butler go. But that was a different time. Mm-hmm. I think that Jimmy Butler respects Nick Nurse. I think that Jimmy and Joel Embiid are very, very close. Could you see, Spencer, firstly, could you see them with, again, you'd have Butler, Embiid, and Maxey, and you wouldn't have a ton of money. You'd have to have a lot of bit players. Those guys would be all max players, but what excitement you'd see. Butler coming back, all would be forgiven. I think it would be incredible drama to bring him back to Philly.
Yeah, I do as well. But I mean, I look at George, I guess LeBron, Jimmy Butler. Those are good. I think that those are all pretty good options.
Do you see Butler coming back, Charlie, or not? Does he love it so much in Miami, in South Beach? It's hard to really. Butler's a different kind of guy, different breed of cat, and he does have his own little crowd, and he likes to. His hobbies are interesting, and he's not really, I mean, he's done very well in Miami, but who's to say that he wouldn't be happy returning to Philadelphia?
I think if they got Butler, that supporting cast becomes more important than ever. I would not make him the favorite over Boston. I think, again, what they do, what these good teams do is, again, once the playoff comes, it's players like 3 through 7 that matter. That, you know, if the superstars get you through the year, it's great. But when the playoffs really happen and defense gets really tough, remember the plus minus when the stars are out of the game, like that usually when Luka would leave the game, you know, Dallas would go from a 6-point deficit to an 18-point deficit. So that bench will matter. I think no matter who they get, it's just part of the equation. They need to backfill with some good rotation players for it to matter in the end.
Yeah, and I agree. And we look at it, Paul Reed, you know, was fun at times, but was not a quality. When Joel Embiid went out, he just couldn't play defense. He couldn't protect the rim. The Knicks destroyed them. Whenever Embiid went out, the Knicks destroyed the Sixers. Paul Reed had a nice run here. He's a likable player. He's not coming back. And I think there's a need for good wings that play defense and can shoot threes. There's a need for some rebounding, for some bulk. Are there any players around the league that might be gritty players that may not be apparent to Sixers fans? Anybody in the league that you'd like, just a tough rebounding kind of guy?
Well, I want some guards to help out Maxi so that he can like spend time off the ball or coming off of screens.
So
I don't want
point guard
somebody to alleviate him of some pressure. And it's interesting, like I've never seen a team, I guess you have to use up the max spots, but I've never seen some team like backfill with like signing like five players. But you even have like Jose Alvarado, who's on the Pelicans, really pesky. Like I like him a lot. He could just get in people's heads. I mean, he's the guy who like goes from behind and steals the ball. OG Anunoby's going to get a lot of money on the open market. I'm just looking at the free agent list. Like Lonzo Ball is always hurt, but try to get a real sleeper. Like Delano Bannon is a guy who played at Nebraska, was undrafted. Nobody even knows really who he is. I mean, Delano Bannon's the most random like kind of NBA player, but he's somebody that is like 6'8" and that I think could be a potential sleeper that can really be a contributor. This is a very interesting free agent class. Miles Bridges, who had the legal trouble with the Hornets, is now, if those legal troubles are behind him, he's a lefty, he's a forward, he can really play above the rim. Like, this is a good free agent class. There's just so many guys that can play.
I think you could sign who had so much fun here. One of my favorite players we haven't mentioned is Campaign, the lefty. The herky-jerky lefty could certainly bring up the ball. He could take some of the point guard duties away. You're not going to have to overpay for that guy. But right. I think he's beloved in the city. I know that he's one of the most fun players I've seen.
He's valuable.
He just basically dances around and jumps around. And you think he's got some value. What do you think, Spence?
Go ahead, Charlie.
What do you think of that guy?
I think a really interesting person as well is Davis Bertans from Charlotte. That dude is a six. He kills the Sixers every time. He's deadly from 3-point. I think he's like 43% for his career. He's kind of like he just stands at the 3-point line, but the guy is deadly, and it's what the Sixers dreadfully lack every year is deadly outside shooting. I think that guy should definitely go after him. He's been in the league for 8 years. The guy's established. I would definitely go after him.
Because you can get all these kind of French guys.
Again, when you're in Charlotte, you're basically in the Bermuda Triangle. You are invisible.
Yeah.
And just like places like Orlando Magic, there's probably a few diamonds in the roughs out there. You could always look at places like Sacramento. TJ McConnell obviously played great. They're probably gonna re-up him in Indiana. They really like him there. And Doug McDermott is a guy who can't shoot the ball and just hasn't found an adequate landing spot. But a guy like that, you know, he's been in the league for a long time, maybe 8 years, and you probably could get him cheap. So it looks like that Daryl Morey is going to have to cobble together a group, including at least one superstar, and put in a lot of role players. And obviously, he's going to be right next to Nick Nurse. Nick Nurse, they're going to have to come up with something because obviously the Celtics have a great team. Their starting five is going to be back, and it's going to be very difficult.
Yeah.
I want to thank everybody for tuning into Rover Sports. The hour really flew by. I want to thank Charlie Bowles, Spencer G, of course, Colin Newby, Josh Dacey calling in from his basketball practice. He took a break to call in. Dr. Steve Lewis is busy saving lives, and we always appreciate our charter rover, Dr. Lewis. But for everybody, I want to say good night and good sports.
The Sports Doctor is on the air. Dr. Bruce Grossinger with Rover Sports Tuesday evenings at 7:30 on WWDB. Dr. Bruce and the Rover crew blend sports and pop culture to keep you entertained and thinking. Brought to you by the Philadelphia Regenerative Medicine and Stem Cell Institute, where Dr. Grossinger and his team help athletes and chronic pain sufferers heal faster and stronger, often without the need for drugs or surgery. Visit online at phillysportsdoc.com and tune in to WWDB Tuesday nights at 7:30 for Rover Sports.
Good evening, Philadelphia. We're here to talk about a team that remained the best team in baseball despite a strange trip over the Atlantic Ocean to London to play in the MLB International Series against the New York Mets over the weekend. The Phillies started off over in London with a victory on Saturday afternoon. That was a laugher, 7-2. But then Sunday, the Mets did squeak out a victory. Phillies kind of gave that one away. It was 3-0 in the sixth inning. They blew one lead and then entered the ninth with Jose Alvarado on the mound. Did give up that lead also, and then the game ended on a weird kind of swinging bunt play from Nick Castellanos. Mets turn the double play and end up getting the split out in London. Overall, I thought the whole event from the standpoint of Major League Baseball went pretty well. I'm generally in favor of pretty much anything that adds novelty to the MLB regular season. It's quite a monotony in a 162-game regular season. Just look at what the NFL does on a regular basis, adding these international series, adding new television windows. You see them doing Christmas Day games, Black Friday, all of these things. Yet that's a sport with 17 regular season games. Baseball has 162, and they need to do more things like this. I thought that the MLB London series had a little bit of a special event feeling. At least in my mind, they pulled it off. They were leaning into the British culture aspect. You're getting a lot of popularity on social media from that sort of thing. You have the Philly fanatic dressed up as a British soldier guarding Buckingham Palace. Of course, it's always good to get Chase Utley involved when the Phillies are one of the teams playing. He's also the arch-rival hated villain of the Mets, so I thought Chase's presence as the MLB ambassador to Europe really played into this well. He also had a lot of the 08 Phillies over there. I know Ryan Howard, Cole Hamels, Carlos Ruiz, Jimmy Rollins, all that group. Shane Victorino, I forgot too. But all that group made the trip over to London, and that's the kind of thing that helps feed into a special event. There was Philly sports trips over there with drones and drones of Phillies fans that made a trip to Europe. God, the city travels well, and all you heard from the national broadcast were how the Phillies fans were dominating the stadium. Also, the 10 a.m. first pitch, I thought, went pretty well. Major League Baseball games, you're going to see a ton in the window at 1 o'clock p.m. Eastern time on Sunday afternoons. This 10:10 Eastern time went pretty well. That also played into the novelty. Maybe it doesn't work every week, whatever they're trying with the Peacock games and the different networks. But I think the one-time 10 a.m. first pitch went pretty well, especially for people in Philadelphia who enjoyed waking up early, having a mimosa, and watching a team in World Series contention on the center stage of baseball right in the middle of the regular season. The one thing I didn't think went that well was the TV broadcast. I think they might have left a little bit of meat on the bone in the London series. Major League Baseball did schedule the Yankees and the Dodgers on the same weekend, which I don't think was a smart idea on their part. But in the presence of such a high-profile series, two of the biggest named teams in the majors, that's going to naturally take away, and the television networks, ESPN and Fox, both put a pretty heavy emphasis on Yankees-Dodgers this weekend. You heard a couple of guys, I know Bryce Harper said this, before they went over. He would have liked to do some kind of round robin with a couple of other teams. Francisco Lindor also said afterwards that he had wished that they played on Friday night and kind of split up the two-game series there, because the days off for Major League Baseball players are a little weird. They throw a wrench into the system, and that's why the Phillies are a little bit off schedule now. So some changes could be made down the road to this international series. It's not the craziest thing. Baseball's only ever done this three times, once in 2019, and then the past two seasons. I know they're going back in 2026, too. So we'll see if there's any other changes made there, and I hope that they do continue to advance this novelty idea that I was talking about. You seen them add the Field of Dreams game, that one in Dyersville, Iowa, kind of a made-for-TV event. You've seen them add the Field of Dreams game in recent seasons in Dyersville, Iowa. It's kind of a made-for-TV event, but that's leaning into the history of the game, the whole idea of America's pastime. I thought that the Field of Dreams game has gone really well, and then the Little League Classic is another one. You're playing up in Williamsport around the time of the Little League World Series. It's another novelty baseball event, so why shouldn't an MLB game be up there and helping the league earn some profit off the eyes that want to watch some baseball? You're also going to have this year the game at Rickwood Field down in Birmingham. That is on June 20th, one day after Juneteenth, but it's honoring the legacy of the Negro Leagues. Baseball just did the stats merger with the Negro Leagues. They're going to continue to publicize this history and put it at the forefront. I think this could be a great tradition too. There's the Birmingham Black Barons played at the stadium for a long time. I think it's cool to revisit the past here. Hopefully this becomes another tradition and something to look forward to in the middle of the MLB regular season, which face it, let's face it, it's not the most exciting to watch for months and months, 162 games, especially with a team like the Phillies, who you know is going to be in the playoffs. The Phillies got a bit of bad news today. JT Realmuto is going on the IL with a knee injury. He's going to have surgery on Wednesday. The organization didn't release a definitive timetable, but Realmuto will at least be out 10 days on the IL. That's minimum. I seen a few people on social media saying it's maybe a 4 to 5 week injury. I think this has a lot to do with the fact that the Phillies are in first place. Realmuto he didn't have one instance where he injured his knee. This is more of an accumulation of wear and tear. You saw Rob Thompson pinch run for him on Sunday afternoon. He put Garrett Stubbs in the ninth inning to run for Realmuto, who's maybe the most athletic catcher in baseball. It's usually not a concern to have his speed on the base pass, but you want to get him off his feet if you're the Phillies. He's caught more innings than anybody in recent seasons. He's just got a lot going on as a catcher to where you need him for the postseason. The concern that I would have in this scenario is that if you look up and down the Phillies roster, I think the drop-off from 1 to 2 at catcher is probably the most concerning area of depth on the entire roster. Garrett Stubbs has become a popular figure in Philadelphia. You see him every time they win a playoff series joining in the celebration. I know that he's very popular in the clubhouse, beloved with his teammates, but I don't know if he's a long-term option as a catcher. He's been a backup for the guy that plays the most, meaning he's had the most minimal role of any backup catcher in the league. But what is he really going to add over a couple of weeks? I don't know. The Phillies brought up Rafael Marchand, and he's only played 13 minor league games this year. So keep in mind, when JT Realmuto missed 3 games at the beginning of May, Rafael Marchand was not healthy and into a rhythm in the minor leagues at that point. If he was, would they have just stuck Real Muto on the IL at that point and done the surgery then? It's a possibility. I don't think they're ever going to tell you that out loud, but it is one indicator that maybe this is a long-term play involving JT Realmuto, one of the best catchers in baseball, who you have long-term money tied up in. So if Rafael Marchand comes in, probably platoons with Garrett Stubbs in the meantime, maybe he shows you a little something, bumps Stubbs back down to that backup role, and you don't have to lean on him as much. If neither of these guys emerges as a legitimate option and JT Realmuto doesn't come back, at least relatively fast, I think catcher just became a huge trade deadline need. We're a little bit far away from that. I don't think Dave Dombrowski needs to rush into any decision, but the possibility is absolutely out there right now that the Phillies might have to look into the catcher market if things don't improve in the upcoming weeks. You still got over 6 weeks until the trade deadline, though, so there's some runway for these players to improve.